Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Kathleen O, and I am a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Monday, June 17th, 2019, and this is the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. Today we are reading from the Big Book. We're in the chapter More About Alcoholism, and we're on page 33, the third paragraph, which starts with To Be Gravely Affected. And it ends on the top of page 34, but try to get them to see it. And we'll be reading and commenting on that one paragraph only. Today's readers are Denise H. will be reading the 12 steps. Teresa S. will be reading the 12 traditions. And the readers of our text are Sandy W., Leslie M., and Carrie S. The share ID for Sunday, June 16th, the special edition, is 13,041. That's 13041. And for this morning, 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 13,042, 13042. Our newcomer greeter for today is Ginger C, and Reggie O will be making the announcements. The OA preamble, and I think someone's unmuted, so if you could check with star one, please. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. And I'll now ask Denise H. to read the 12 steps, please.
Good morning, this is Denise H. in East Tennessee, and these are the 12 steps as adapted for Overeaters Anonymous. Number one, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. And four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continue to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. That's it.
Thank you, Denise H. And Teresa S., would you read the 12 traditions, please?
Good morning. This is Teresa S. I am a compulsive overeater from Bismarck, North Dakota. 12 traditions. These 12 traditions are to the groups what the 12 steps are to the individual. They are suggested principles to ensure the survival and growth of the many groups that compose Overeaters Anonymous. Number one, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Number two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Number three, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. Number four,
Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. Number 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. Number 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise. Thus, problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Number 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Number 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. Number 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. Number 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. Number 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need to always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. Number 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you, and I'll pass.
And thank you, Teresa S. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. And today we resume our study. We're in the Big Book, the chapter More About Alcoholism. We are on page 33, the third paragraph, which starts with to be gravely affected. And it ends on the top of page 34, but try to get them to see it. And Sandy W., good morning. If you could get us started, please.
Good morning, Kathleen. Thanks so much for your service. Yes, this is Sandy W., gratefully recovered in Connecticut. To be gravely affected, one does not necessarily have to drink a long time nor take the quantities some of us have. This is particularly true of women. Potential female alcoholics often turn into the real thing and are gone beyond recall in a few years. Certain drinkers, who would be greatly insulted if called alcoholics, are astonished at their inability to stop. We, who are familiar with the symptoms, see large numbers of potential alcoholics among young people everywhere, but try and get them to see it. And then there's a little two, and when I go down to that footnote, it says, true, when this book was first published, but a 2014 US/Canada membership survey showed about 1/11% of AAs were 30 and under. So if I read this paragraph, I'm really struck by how hard I fought the idea that I was gravely affected by this disease. You know, I think it's because I was so much like the man of 30 that we just read about. You know, in fact, I was even about 30 years old and had struggled with my compulsive eating from a young age. And then I guess in my teens and 20s, I added restricting and purging and overexercising. But close to 30, I landed that husband I was so desperately desiring, got pregnant and gave birth to my first son. And at that time, I too, like that man of 30, was able to put the food down enough to make my life seem at least manageable or somewhat manageable. I think my desire to be the best mom replaced my desire for food. And in many ways, I got my effect from motherhood and made my sons my higher power. But wouldn't you know, those darn boys had the nerve to grow up on me and leave the nest. And just as this book predicts, my disease had been progressing all that time. And boy, did it come back with a vengeance. You know, by that time, because I'd been able to control my eating all that time, I was even more convinced that I could do it again and just needed to find the right diet or exercise plan or health coach or therapist. The list goes on and on. You know, as this paragraph describes, I was greatly insulted when others called me out on it and astonished I couldn't stop again after those years of reprieve. But what finally sealed the deal for me and got me to see I was the real compulsive eater, you know, the type we talk about of the hopeless variety, was when I realized I just had nowhere else to go. And thankfully, that led me to this meeting and to this book. You know, right away, I understood the physical allergy because I always knew food did something for me that it didn't do to all the normal eaters in my life. But that mental twist baffled me until I got into this chapter and these stories, again, especially that story of the man of 30, because my life so paralleled his. You know, now I just thank God that my fate didn't parallel his too, and instead that I became convinced of how gravely affected I was, and led from that point through this book and the help of everyone on this meeting to the steps and a spiritual awakening and a higher power, you know, the only way to live a recovered life. And with that, I'll pass. Thanks again, Kathleen, for your service.
And thank you so much, Sandy W. Okay, we're reading one paragraph and commenting on one paragraph this morning, page 33, the third paragraph. Who else would like to comment on that paragraph?
Carrie. Kara L.
Lance L.
Hi, Rindy.
Sylvia.
Lily E. B. Okay, hold on 1 second. Hold on. So I got Carrie S. and Lance L., and there was someone between those two.
Kara L.
Okay, Kara L. And I have you, Irene B. And who else?
Sylvia.
Two people came in. Can one?
Sylvia.
Irene, I have you.
Yes.
Sylvia.
Okay.
Yes,
and did I hear a Frida?
Yeah, Freedom H.
Freedom. Okay. Okay. So hold. We'll stop right there. And Sylvia, what's the first initial of your last name? Oh, I'll get it when we get there. Okay.
VG. Sorry. I had muted again. VG.
Okay. That's okay. Okay. So I have Carrie S., Kara L., Lance L., Irene B., Freedom H., and Sylvia VG. Okay. So go ahead, Carrie S.
Great. Good morning. Carrie S., recovered in Golden, Colorado. And this paragraph is hitting me really hard this morning because my own son of 22 has to be beaten into a state of reasonableness. I can't be the one to point out that putting on 50 pounds in college he is going to be gravely affected. His body, his mental state is going to be gravely affected. And, you know, I just have to thank God that he was able to say to me last week how serious and alarming the food is for him. So it felt like he was taking, you know, a form of step one powerlessness by saying to me, you know, Mom, when I go to the convenience store to get my wife and I some candy bars for the evening, he's like, I'm doing weird things with food. I'll buy like a couple extra and eat them on the way home before I get home. And I don't tell her about it, you know, and he knows I've been in OA for 7 years. He knows, he watches me weigh and measure my food. He knows that I work this daily design for living. And so I just get to show up and be in a place where I may be of maximum usefulness to him. And I can't be the one to say to him, you know, buddy, maybe you have a problem with food, but I can look at him and say, you know, you come by it genetically, your mom's a food addict. So I just get to cling to the thought that in God's hands, the dark past is the greatest possession that I have, the key to life and happiness for others. And with it, I can avert death and misery for them. So I'm not in a place where I get to diagnose. That's up to the other person. I just get to show up and be a light on this path. So if you're still struggling in this food, it's your choice. You get to let the food beat you into a state of reasonableness. And for me, I had to really just lean into my higher power and pray that God could relieve me of this insanity. Thank God for OA. With that, I pass.
Thank you, Carrie S. And Kara L., you're up next, followed by Lance L.
Good morning. My name is Kara L., recovered compulsive overeater from Long Beach, California. Thank you for everybody doing service on this meeting today and bringing it to us. This is a really powerful paragraph for me because, you know, to be gravely affected, one does not necessarily have to drink a long time, nor does it take the quantities that some of us have. And that's the craziness and the sneakiness and the insidiousness of my disease is, yeah, I mean, for a long time I could stay at a healthy body weight and it would, you know, I'd gain a little weight and I'd say, oh, okay, you know, just I'll take it off by not eating, by restricting. And at that point I didn't see that that was a problem until I couldn't do it anymore. Until I would wake up in the morning and I would eat what I thought was my diet breakfast, and then I would continue to eat the whole rest of the day. And looked at my husband and, you know, and said, I can't diet anymore. I don't understand. And then it just continued to get worse as life started happening and I couldn't cope and I would eat more and it just, you know, I was baffled. I was a baffled lot, right? And then I found OA and I was like, oh, I knew I was home the first day I walked in. I knew I would never be able to leave the rooms because there was a solution there. And, and I believe over the last 15 years, you know, more and more of the solution has come to me, you know, slowly but surely more and more of the solution has come to me. And, you know, it was this last 7 months, you know, that I reworked my steps again with a big book focus and that I had somebody take me through that all those years of a little bit more clicked in. And it was this vision meetings, I listen every single day. You know, if I miss, I go back and I listen to the recording. It was working with others. It was enlarging my spiritual life and checking with my higher power on everything. You know, what should I have for breakfast this morning, this or this? Which tea do I want this morning, this one or this one? You know, which lipstick am I wearing today, this one or this one? You know, it's that continued taking those step 10s when things are going wrong. It's that reaching out for outreach calls. It's being, you know, part of this program and finding my seat in this program that has given me the solution, has given me recovery today and allowed me to be recovered. And I'm so grateful for that. And I'm so grateful for everyone that is brave enough to share on this line and everyone that answers my phone calls and everyone that's been before me. So with that, I will pass. Thank you, everybody. Have a lovely day.
Thank you, Kara L. And Lance L., you're up next, followed by Irene B.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Lance L. I'm from California. I'm recovered, and I'm also a compulsive overeater. So the thing is that, you know, in my younger years, I was absolutely insulted when people would say that I ate too much or why do you have another serving or things like that. Why can't you just keep your fingers off of it? I saw my uncle, he had multiple strokes because of overeating. My father is a diabetic. My mother has stents in the bloodline to her heart. I mean, we have it in our history, but yet when people said it to me, I was completely different. You know, I was absolutely insulted when they would point out what they saw. And, you know, even with that information for me, I could not stop. In fact, I would become resentful at them and even eat more. And, you know, part of being an alcoholic, the definition of that is a mental state that precedes the first drink and a physical allergy that creates the craving. Now, I don't know what anybody else's definition of that is, but what our book says is that I am restless, irritable, and discontent unless I seek some ease and comfort, which comes at once from a few drinks. And because I have that, I am alcoholic. I was blown away that I couldn't stop, though, and I tried so many things to stop. So the good news is that this is a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, which is alcoholic. So it seems like it. Okay, it's under false pretense that that is my life and I can't get out of it. So if you're in that position where you think you can't get out of it, it seems like that's the only reality that you have. Well, we have a program of recovery here, which I am experiencing today. I'm experiencing that the thinking that I had years ago that this is going to be my life and I'm going to have a short life and I'm going to die early, and I don't even care about that because I feel good right now dipping into my favorite foods. That is a false reality. What I have today is very real. My family benefits from it. My friends benefit from it. My coworkers benefit from it. And the most important thing is that I benefit from it because I'm moving closer to my higher power. And, you know, that's essentially what the steps have created for me. Moving closer to my higher power is moving further away from my addictive nature. Thank you. I found it.
Thank you, Lance L. And Irene B., you're up next, followed by Freedom H.
Good morning. Thank you so much for your service. I'm so glad that I get to share this morning. This disease, I'm a recovering bulimic. I've been abstinent for almost 27 months, but I've been struggling. I've been trying to decide who am I, what kind am I, and I think I was a little bit in denial, and this disease is cunning and patient, and it's really, really, it can catch you and snare you immediately. I was snared into bulimia within less than a 7-day period, I know. I thought I had discovered America, and instead what I found is that I had found my prison, where I lived for 40-plus years. And, it never occurred to me that stopping would be a problem. But then when I realized that I was weak from binging and purging 24/7, and then all of a sudden I felt terrible, and I couldn't do anything, I wasn't functioning, then I said, oh, my gosh, I got to stop. And I tried to stop, and I couldn't. And there began my journey into that aspect of the illness. I've been a compulsive overeater since age 6, but that was, I still functioned. You know, I lived in between binges, and I was heavy. I thought I was obese. As it turns out, I look at pictures, I wasn't obese, but my self-image was just really distorted. So I'm just here to say thank you for this program. And this illness is horrible. It's progressive. It's cunning. It's baffling. And I was in denial. I thought that maybe I'd go back to being a cucumber. But once you've been pickled, you can't. And I came close to relapse. And just because I didn't engage in a full binge and purge or anything like that doesn't mean that I was free. And in my mind, as long as I wasn't engaged in the behavior, you know, yes, I was one of those who could. Well, as it turns out, yes, I didn't engage in the binge and purge, but my thoughts, oh my gosh, I started to obsess about the food and when was I going to eat such and such and da 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 da. So I became a slave to my thoughts again. I became a slave to my food, and even though I wasn't engaged in the behavior, I was fully in the disease, in my mind, in the sense that I didn't have freedom or neutrality anymore. And by the grace of God, thank you so much, I'll pass. I'm here, and I'm okay. But boy, I'm hanging on to the program, and with that, I'll pass. Thank you so much for listening to me. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Irene B. Freedom H., it is your turn, followed by Sivia VG.
Thank you so much for all those who do service. I love this OA meeting. Basically, I related to, I was gravely affected. I was surprised how even though I started eating healthy food, I was still wanting to overeat even on the healthy food, which surprised me that I wanted to overeat on the healthy food. So I realized it wasn't just the food. It's actually, I thought, oh, it's just the food I'm eating makes me want to overeat. Well, no, that's not true. It doesn't matter. I can eat the most healthiest food in the world, and I still have that urge to overeat. It wasn't until someone told me, don't shame myself, that I started realizing that it's more just the food that I'm eating. So I'm very thankful that I'm learning and growing. And then it said, but try and get them to see it. And I was like, wow, if you would have tried to get me to see this or understand this about 5 years ago, I would have had no understanding of what you were telling me. People may have been reading me a Chinese book, because I would have not been able to understand what people were trying to tell me. But I've had an awakening from this program and doing this 12-step program and getting a spiritual guide, a sponsor, which I call spiritual guide, has helped me so much. And there was times I wanted to give up, and I'm thankful I didn't, because I had some issues, because I have some communication issues. But I'm thankful that I just decided to humble myself, keep being willing, and take it to God, my higher power. And I've had an awakening, and I understand things that I would have never in my wildest dreams understood. And this program makes all the sense in the world to me now. It makes more sense to me than anything anybody ever told me in the past. So with that, I'll mute. Thank you so much for letting me.
And thank you, Freedom H. Sivia VG, you're up next. You're up next. And before, I just want to remind everybody, because we'll be taking some more names after Sivia. We're on page 33, the third paragraph, to be gravely affected. It ends on page 34, and I'll be taking some more names after Sivia. So go ahead, Sivia.
Thank you. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can.
Perfect. Thank you so much for your service. Thank you. Good morning, everybody. So what hit me when I first read this section with everybody this morning, one does not necessarily have to drink a long time nor take the quantities some of us have. And it reminded me how diverse of a group we are. I mean, there are people who have successfully lost 10, 15 pounds and have maintained it for, 3 years, 10 years, whatever. And then there are people who have lost 150 pounds and maintained it for a long, long time. And then there are those people who need to gain weight because they have been restrictors, or those who are purgers, and those who have had surgery of some sort to reduce their stomach's ability to hold food. And I was reminded of a discussion I had at the World Service Organization last year about the whole diversity aspect. We are so different in our struggles and what our struggles are, and especially in regard to our eating behaviors. And the only thing that we need is the desire to stop eating compulsively, not just overeating or undereating, but there's all sorts of the eating behaviors. And I found that I was eating very healthy foods, following my plan at certain times and places that were unhealthy. And for me, being in this program now, it's going on 10 years. This was a realization. The other aspect is that I can't run my sponsee's life. We all have our own programs and our own higher powers, and I need to rely on my infinite higher power and surrender my willfulness and surrender my life, my entire being, to my higher power. And that is just what, that's what hit me when I read this. And I think I'll pass now. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Sevilla BG. Okay, I am going to take some more names. We're reading page 33, the third paragraph. Who else would like to comment on that paragraph?
Nancy G. Deborah G.
Okay.
Ruth G.
Hold on. So I got Deborah and Ruth, but two people came in before them.
Lindsay B.
Roz G. Okay, Lindsay B. and Roz G. Okay, and who else?
Lexi G.
Okay, two people came in. Try that again.
Jean J.
Letty C.
Okay, who had the R name?
Jean J.
Did I say Ruth G?
I got Ruth G. Something that sounded like Reggie, but it wasn't Reggie. Okay,
Letty
I can take.
C.
Say that again, please.
Let's see. Yes.
And one more?
Jean J.
Betsy QK.
Jean J. and Betsy, what's your
QK.
Last initial? QK. Okay, let's stop there. I'm not sure if we can get to all of you, but here's who I have. Lindsay B., Roz G., I think it was, well, I can't remember your last initial, but Deborah, Ruth G., Letsy C, or Letsy, Jean J, and Betsy QK. And I've got, there's a lot of background noise there. So if you could all mute except for Lindsay B, please. Go ahead.
Yes, good morning. I wasn't sure whether to share on this or not, but it occurred to me that it could be helpful for somebody. And I was one of those young people who came in at age 22. And that was many decades ago. And a lot of the time it was the blind leading the blind. I mean, I remember, you know, like if my sponsor had been abstinent for 2 weeks, that was really big. And we weren't using the big book. We were using OA literature. And a lot of you people, I'm sure out there, remember those days. And but I kept coming back, and I you know, knew that there were people like me. And that was so important. And so I had been in program, definitely not working a perfect program, having long bouts of recovery and in and out, but able to stay in a normal sized body, which of course we know doesn't mean that we're recovered. But back then I had a life, and you know, had children, and my children had always known me in program. And when I met their dad, I said to him, you know, program is my, if my program doesn't come first, then we're not going to have a marriage. And I remember when my daughter was about a teenager, and she'd been gaining a little bit of weight, and I remember thinking, oh, I wonder, you know, if she might have what I have, but I would never dream of saying anything. But she was watching me, you know, was weighing, measuring my food, and no flour, no sugar, and at that time, and I remember her saying to me, you know, I think I might have what you have, Mum, but there's no way I would give up flour and sugar. And I'm like, well, of course not, you know, you have a really full life, it's not ruining your life, and I wasn't ready to give it up for decades, you know, to really look at that as permanently anyway. I could give it up for a certain amount of time. And I'm so glad that I learned in these rooms that I can't force this on any member of my family. And I never ever said anything about anything. And then finally, you know, like 10 years later, she came and shared a few things and, like, you know, gradually would ask me questions. And I was able to not try and give her any more than she asked for. And now I have a daughter that's been working in an incredibly strong program. And, you know, she's in her early 20s. And I'm the one that's in relapse. And But we have this amazing way of communicating. Never once did she try to say to me, Mom, you're just not getting it. You need to blah, blah, blah. She works this program the way I hear recovered people on the line, the way she is able to talk to me and separate from what's mom, what's daughter, and all the other stuff. And because of her being such an amazing inspiration, as somebody that came into the rooms, her first experience with Vision for You, you know, it would be very easy to say, well, if only I had that, you know. Well, I didn't. And the fact of the matter is now, you know, I'm watching her, despite her young years, of a person that is so willing to work this program and not trying to find shortcuts like I was. And it's just such an inspiration. And I'm so grateful. I'm on day two. I'm feeling a lot of hope. Thank you.
Thank you, Lindsay B. Roz G., you're up next, followed by Deborah.
Okay, thank you very much. I'm out walking. You may hear a little noise. So I'm Roz G., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. Just wanted to kind of pick out three things that really stood out to me on this paragraph. First of all, when I went to meetings early on, there weren't a lot of men in the rooms. You know, usually one, maybe two. I think that, you know, the disease affects male and female, but my experience was, you know, sitting in meetings with more women than men. But I love to hear the voices of the guys on these meetings. Strong recovery, you know, no BS. I really love to hear that. So I'm grateful for the men that come forward and speak in these meetings. And just being insulted, you know, I don't like anybody telling me anything about me, you know, whether my I'm not standing up straight, you know. My mom used to make fun of my pigeon toes. No, not make fun. Point out. She didn't make fun of me, so I need to redact that. She just pointed out that I was pigeon-toed and had bad posture. And I learned at an early age to get very insulted and hurt by things that people said to me and take it really seriously all the way into my recovery. And then I learned about Rule 62. Stop taking yourself so damn seriously. And today I'm able to laugh in love at myself. And then the third thing is that trying to get them to see it. As I've heard in the earlier shares, the disease had to beat me down into submission. A couple of things were, you know, I took a lot of diuretics and I got very dehydrated. And one day I had to, you know, leave work and lied and said that, well, it was more like diarrhea because I was taking too many pills. But I had to lie and tell them I was dehydrated and falling asleep at the wheel after eating too many carbs. You know, those things were things that had to show me that I had the real deal. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Roz G. Deborah, you're up next, followed by Ruth G. And Deborah, if you could give me the first initial of your last name.
It's G. My name's Deborah, and I'm a compulsive overeater. Deborah G. And thank you so much for all of your service and for all the shares. And, you know, growing up, I never thought that I was a compulsive overeater. I would eat a lot of food, and then I would exercise. And then people would say, oh, you've got a high metabolism, and I would never show. I never thought I was because I would never show things. I would focus on my body a lot. I had a distorted body image, but I would never focus on having large body parts. I never would think that. I would always think if I just exercise enough or do enough, that it'd be okay. And then when I got older, that wasn't working anymore, but I still did not see it. I didn't see it as a child. I didn't see it as an adolescent. And I didn't see it going into my early adult years either. I just started doing the diets and all these things, the yo-yo thing back and forth. And I recently got into, I've been in OA in and out, and I recently got into OA, and I had 2 years, a little over 2 years, of abstinence. And then the thought came to my mind that I could have artificial sweetener. And I know I can't have artificial sweetener. And I had the artificial sweetener that got me started. And I truly, I'm starting over now because I truly can see how I am now a compulsive overeater. Just from doing that artificial sweetener took me to the compulsive overeating. And I need to say that without any shame. It was a learning experience and also an experience of how important it is to work this program because I deal with a very insidious disease that has to do with my thinking. I was listening to the share yesterday's special edition, I'm powerless over food, and I'm also powerless over my thinking. And I'm just really grateful that I didn't keep on with compulsive overeating, that I'm back, you know, back into doing what I need to be doing and being here with all of you, that I'm not alone. And thank you so much.
Thank you, Deborah G. Ruth G., you're up next, followed by Let's See C.
Ruth G., and I'm going to share. And I'm in the program. Well, I started at 45 years old, but I was a compulsive eater before that. But nobody knows. I mean, I'm recovered 1 minute at a time, 1 day at a time. Very important to understand that, because nobody knows what's going to be in one's life that will make me kill myself again with food. I don't really know, but for today, I'm okay, by the grace of God. I'm in the program 46 years and never left. I never left this program. It's a wonderful program. How to be a better human being. I love this program. But it's a lot of hard work. You've got to keep on working this program. And I started, when I really started at 45, I was very upset. My son got married at 12 o'clock at night. He came home, I'm married. Never had a wedding. I was surprised. I just was in shock. And I started to overeat terribly because he didn't act the way I wanted him to. And that was terrible. I mean, you know, like, who am I to judge how my son wanted to get married or whatever? And I understand that. But I was upset because the family would be very upset if he got married without a wedding or without telling me that he was going to get married. But you know what? I can't make anyone behave the way I want them to. Not my children, not my husband, nobody. And I am so grateful for this program, but I am not Miss Perfect. Now, when I first started, I was on that gray sheet. I was so perfect for years. But now I eat everything in moderation because when you're disturbed. When you're disturbed, you feel like eating. But I am not overeating. By the grace of God, I don't eat bags and boxes and old things. With that, I'm passing. Thank you for letting me share. Thank you for your service.
And thank you, Ruth G. Let's see, you're up next, followed by Jean S.
Hello, this is Leslie C. From Southern California. Thanks for the opportunity to share this morning. The word gravely really strikes something I can relate to. Gravely, you know, my disease is fatal. I know that in program, everyone has their own hell. Some people's hell is 20 pounds overweight. You know, some people it's 300 pounds overweight or it's 75 pounds underweight. Everyone's version of hell is what they can take, wherever their bottom lands them, you know. And I know in program when I hear other people's individuals' versions of hell, some I can identify in with and some will identify me right out. So I have to remember that they're just talking about their version of hell and what they could withstand before they found their bottom. I know that I was being helped, I guess I would say, with my weight since I was in grade school. I started compulsively overeating at 4. And really all that did for me was confirm what I knew in my heart, that there was something wrong with me. Excuse me, that's choking me up. and that even all these adults saw it, that they wanted me to change the one thing that got me through life. And that was really hard for a little girl. It's really hard for me as an adult. I know over and over and over in my life, I would get insulted, not by being called a compulsive overeater, but being insulted because that was plain to see at nearly 400 pounds. But I would get insulted when people would just try to help, you know, because even though the world could see the results of my disease was always in public. I'm sorry, in private, you know, I would overeat in private. So I would be affronted, I would be insulted if offered help. And, you know, that runs really deep in me. And as someone who's been in program now for 15 years, and has gone through the hell of regaining 100 plus pounds more than once in program, that was really hell. I know I have to be humble enough to accept help, have to be smart enough to want help. And the one that I have to let help me most of all is my higher power. And I work really hard. I'm sorry. So, I'm grateful for the meeting, and I will pass. Thank you.
And thank you, SEC. So, Jean S., you're up next, followed by Betsy QK, and I think if you both take 2 minutes, we might be able to get you both in. So go ahead, Jean S. Jean S., are you there? Star one to unmute.
This is Jean J. in Portland, Oregon. Yeah, recovered compulsive eater. And the line that sticks out to me is the first one in the paragraph. And, of course, keeping this in the larger context of more about alcoholism, the chapter we're in. And basically they're making a case here for the idea that we as compulsive eaters will try to find our disease will try to find ways to distance ourselves from the pack and say, well, this is why it won't work for me, or these, you know, I have particular situations here why I'm not really one of them and why I can try what seems to be an easier, softer way. And so here is it, to be gravely affected, one does not necessarily have to drink a long time. Or I would say to be gravely affected, one, fill in the blank. Whatever it is. And for me, it was, well, I've never been a 100-pounder. I don't have the physicians of the world telling me I have to straighten up or I'm going to have severe physical consequences. Even though I've pushed up to that window a couple of times, it's not like I've just have never had serious weight to lug around, which I have, but I've kind of kept it in the area of just fat enough to ruin the party. And then the other one is that I've used as an excuse, or my disease has used to drive a wedge between me and recovery, is that I was born this way. Both parents, addicted, the whole family, were just a bunch of alcoholics and foodies, and you know, nature and nurture have been my experience. And so it boils down to, do I have the torment in the head? You know, never mind what's in the blank. Do I have no peace here on the home court? And boy, I sure qualify there. I have always qualified there. And once it, thank you, higher powers, they graciously gave me enough pain to keep bringing me to my knees because it took many times, and finally helping me be available to guidance. And I'm very grateful for that. I'm so happy to be here with other folks that are on the Broad Highway. This is Jean in Portland, and I'll pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Jean J. And Betsy QK, unfortunately, we're not going to have time for you this morning. I apologize for that.
No worries.
Okay, thanks, Betsy. So, let's see. We will now close. First of all, I want to thank all of you who shared this morning, and especially Team Monday. I'd like to give a special shout out and thanks to you, Denise H., Teresa F., Sandy W., Leslie M., Carrie S., Reggie O., and Mo H. And we are going to now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. And Leslie M., if you would please read a vision for you.
Thank you, Kathleen L., for your service. This is Leslie M., a recovered compulsive overeater from Long Island, New York. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is a great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.